you know, you have a set of opportunities in front of you. What you make of your life basically is in your hands, right? And that was something that was kind of drilled into me quite early on. And he would say, like, hey, listen, we're not like super rich people. I don't have a lot of money to give you, or, you know, a business that you can inherit from me. You're going to have to build your own life. So the only way you're going to be able to do it is with education.
This is the Indian Nest podcast. Stories of success from leaders and change maker of Indian origin. Why have Indians achieved success across so many different disciplines around the globe? I have no idea, but let's find out together. Every story is unique, and we have a unique one with us today. I'm very excited to have Praveen Akiraju with us today. He's the managing director of Insight Partners, which is a venture growth stage investor. He has built and exited several companies and also been in a leadership role at Cisco. He also serves on several boards. I invited him on this show as he co-leads the India Investments and Strategy at Insight Partners. And I was curious to find out about the difference in the entrepreneurship ecosystem in the US and India. Welcome, Praveen. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on our podcast.
Thank you, Sanjay. It's a real pleasure. And yeah, looking forward to the conversation.
Praveen, as they say, to get to the end, you need to start with the very, very beginning. Not that this is the end for you, but to get to the very, very beginning, we need to have that conversation. So why don't you tell our listeners, where were you born? Tell us a little bit about your parents, siblings, if any. That would be very helpful.
Absolutely, yeah. So I was born in a small town in the state of Andhra Pradesh called Viyur. It happens to be one of the first sugar factories in the southern part of India. So my grandfather was a sugarcane and a paddy farmer. And, you know, I had a lot of great memories of visiting him in my childhood. I grew up mostly in Madras, now called Chennai, and, you know, did pretty much all of my education, including my undergraduate, in the University of Madras in Chennai. And when I was around 21 years old, came over to the United States to do my graduate studies in electrical engineering. I got a master's in Dublin and joined Cisco at the early stages of the internet. So that's a brief summary.
No, that's a great summary, but we're going to take you back, as I said. So you're born in a village in Andhra Pradesh. How long were you there before you moved to Chennai? How long were you there in Andhra Pradesh?
My father was an automobile engineer. He worked for Hindustan Motors, which
of
used
course,
to make
ambassadors.
Ambassador
yeah,
cars.
Yes, the good old ambassador cars.
Exactly.
So, ambassador and Fiat, as they say, we had two choices.
Yeah, so we actually never lived in Viyur. My father was initially in Kolkata. So I basically, my early part of my life, I was actually in Kolkata, though I have no memories of it, before we moved to Chennai when I was about 2 years or so, 2 years old. So we used to mostly visit my grandfather in his village over summer holidays, like, you know, all of us used to, you know, go and kind of get into trouble, I guess.
Of course. Now, why did Dad move to Chennai? You're from Andhra originally, so why did he move to Chennai? For work?
Yeah, so as part of Hindustan Motors, he was basically given responsibility for the south zone of India for ambassador cars. He was an engineer, primarily working with customers. So the headquarters for Hindustan Motors was Madras, Chennai at that time. And so he ended up moving from the factory, which the Hindustan Motors factory was in Calcutta. So when he was posted to the south zone, essentially ended up moving to Chennai.
At that time, they were owned by the Birlas or something like that, right? Hindustan Motors?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So that's why the Cal connection is there. But so you basically, your memories of growing up are really from Madras/Chennai, right?
Yeah. All my childhood was in Chennai.
So you Tamil, Telugu both?
Yes, yeah, I can speak Tamil, Telugu, Hindi, obviously. That was kind of my second language in school. And and I can understand a smattering of other languages. We have some Malayalam in the house as well.
Wow, that's fantastic. So mom was a homemaker?
Probably. She was a teacher. She was a school teacher.
Oh, she was a school teacher. Fantastic.
Yeah. So she taught primary school. So first grade, second grade, you know, at that time. So I think she took some time off when we were kids, ended up going back to teaching before she retired.
Well, that's great. Siblings, probably?
Yeah, so I have one sister. She's also here, actually, incidentally, in the San Francisco Bay Area. You know, it still happened. But yeah, so, you know, we grew up together.
Younger, older?
She's younger. Yeah. Younger.
Okay. So you are the older person to lead the charge, so to speak.
Yeah, I guess the older one always gets into trouble first.
Yeah, of course. But the younger one gets the hand-me-downs. I can attest I'm the youngest. It's 1, 2, 3, depends on how many hand-me-downs that happen. But that's a whole different story, Praveen. So at that time, any family besides mom and dad that you were living in? Or it was just the four of you?
Just the four of us, obviously, our grandparents. We would go visit them, or sometimes they would come and visit us mostly. But
summer, mainly.
We ended up, yeah, and because we were sort of in Madras, which we didn't really have a lot of near relatives there. Most of them were in Hyderabad or in other parts of India.
Great. So what school were you going to early on when you were going to school in Chennai?
Yeah, so I went to an ICSE school.
Central board.
Central board, yeah. It was kind of, it was a school called, you know, Venkat Subbarao Matriculation School, High Secondary School, long name. And, you know, I think anybody from Chennai will know that's know the school. You know, it was in the T. Nagar, I guess, area of Chennai. So I pretty much, I think, you know, I was in a, for my kindergarten, I was in a convent school, but then pretty much did all of my schooling there. We had like 2 years where my father moved to Hyderabad when I was in my 11th and 12th grade. So that was kind of, till then, that time, I was basically in Venkat Subbarao. So it was an ICSE school. And
was it tough?
It was, yeah, it was quite challenging. The good news is, like, you know, we had like an eclectic collection of classmates from both from Tamil Nadu, but also from all over India, because it was a central school. So my best friends were a Bengali, you know, kid called Sandeep and a Kannada guy called Srinivas.
Wow. Great memory. So people who would come in, like armed forces, etc., they would send their kids over to the central school. Well, that's fantastic. But it was a tough school. Any subjects that you kind of were gravitating towards?
You know, I think in general, I was an okay student, I will say. I was not like one of those, you know, toppers. So, you know, I think math came easy to me more than anything else, if I were to say. I was absolutely not a fan of biology or history. Those two subjects I would dread, or language for that matter. I think our Hindi, which was my second language, was pretty intense.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I can imagine. Sports? Were you involved in sports at all?
Yeah, so I used to play cricket for our school. We were not very
what
good.
Position were you playing?
I had this unique skill. Well, I don't know if skill, but characteristic, I would say. I was a left-handed batsman. So I was the only left-handed batsman they could find, so I ended up playing on the team. I'd, you know, probably in the middle order, I would say, and yeah, that was pretty much it. We had some great fast bowlers. I remember one of them, Sanjay, still even now, who's pretty fast. I have a few bruises to show for facing him in the net.
No helmets at that time, huh?
No helmets. Yeah, we'd be hand me down. Like, we'd have one pad, right?
Yeah.
on the leg facing the bowler. So. Yeah, you have to be quick on your feet.
That is true. But a lot of camaraderie and friendships during that whole experience,
yeah,
of cricket, etc.
Right. I mean, I think, as I said, it was sort of, you know, got to go to school with people from different parts of India and, you know, different cultures. We go to their houses, eat all these different kinds of food, different languages people would speak. You know, I'm still in touch with my, you know, now with the advent of WhatsApp.
We have a group. Of course. Who doesn't?
And it's kind of fascinating to see the journey that each of us took, as, you know, from our childhood. I'm still quite close to at least one of my friends who we used to hang out together, Srinivas, and that person I'd mentioned earlier. And yeah, he's gone on to do great things, did his PhD at Oxford, and, you know, works in Bangalore now. So he's an awesome guy.
But being in that central school exposed you to different cultures, languages, etc. If you had stayed in the village,
right,
maybe you would not have gotten that. And it was an English medium school, right?
It was English medium, yeah. It was English medium, you know, ICSE, as I said, right?
Of course.
I guess these days, everything's now CBSE, but at that time, we did have ICSE. It was slightly different from the CBSE curriculum. And you know, I can't quite describe what exactly was different, but, you know, we did have another school that was CBSE, which some of my friends used to go to.
So mom was a teacher. Was she helping with homework at all?
When she could, I think there's a point in time where, you know, particularly on math, it would be my father. I mean, being an engineer, he was a bit of a stickler for discipline. And so, you know, I think that was good for me, I guess, at that age.
How was he a stickler for discipline, Tori?
Well, I think, you know, just in terms of like making sure my work got done in time and, you know, it was neat and, you know, it was kind of like it held me accountable for my grades and such like. So, you know, I guess as most fathers would, you know, for all of us growing up, right, in India, you know, mom was always the easy one I could go to escape.
Remember, it's the good cop, bad cop syndrome, always. Somebody has to be a good cop and somebody, or sometimes it's both good cops, sometimes both bad cops. But I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about myself. But anyway, so he was a stickler, mom was on the easy side, but he set high expectations for you.
Well, I think, you know, my dad was unique in that sense, right? Now, I think obviously he pushed me to do well in school, as all parents would. But, you know, his point always was that, look, you have a set of opportunities in front of you. What you make of your life basically is in your hands, right? And that was something that was kind of drilled into me quite early on. And he would say like, hey, listen, we're not like super rich people. I don't have a lot of money to give you. Or, you know, a business that you can inherit from me, you're going to have to build your own life. So the only way you're going to be able to do it is with education. And so that was really sort of his thing that I remember that was drilled into my head. And it really shaped sort of how I thought about things and, you know, how I approached things later on as well.
So that kind of made an imprint on you, Praveen, that you kind of had to do it. Was he nudging you towards engineering in any way?
Not really. I mean, I think he was an engineer.
Of course.
I was not a big fan of biology.
Of course.
So I think the options kind of narrowed. I mean, ultimately, I chose to do electronics and communications engineering primarily because my inspiration was one of my cousins was 10 years or so older to me, who used to come and visit us when he was going to IIT Madras. So I kind of looked up to him a lot and it ended up being sort of my inspiration of, you know, why I pursued what I pursued.
So he was kind of a role model?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I think he was, you know, he would take me along with him. I would go stay with him in his hostel in IIT Madras with all his friends.
That must have been some experience with the rarefied atmosphere of IIT Madras.
Yeah, you know, I think I used to...
But he was 10 years older than you, right?
He was 10 years older than me, yeah. So
you were a kid when he would be taking you.
Yeah, I would be like, you know, 10 or so, 10, 11, 12, something like that, yeah.
So what were your memories of that?
Yeah, it was great. I liked the food and the mess.
Of course.
You know, and it was, you know, IIT Madras is a very unique campus. You know,
of course, like, one of the best.
Like the city disappears. So I remember that and, you know, going and hanging out with him in his lab, but to lasers going around. So it was good. It was cool that I could go do that once in a while.
So he was taking you there and you thought that, you know, it would be great to do something like him. And that kind of stuck in your mind. So when you were at the critical 11th and 12th grade, now dad went back to Hyderabad, right?
Yeah. So he ended up basically... He got a position at Mahindra Nissan. So it opened up like a new factory, Hyderabad. And, you know, it was a great brand new factory and such like. So, yeah, it was kind of a bit of a decision because culturally it's incredibly different. And I, in Hyderabad, talking about like late 1980s, right?
Yeah. So, but did dad just go by himself or?
All of us went.
All of you went to Hyderabad.
Family basically shifted. So
but that must have been a little challenging because, you know, all friends, school systems. Was this 11th, 12th, was it central board?
No, it was, that was AP state board, right? It was dramatically different. Yeah, it was quite a different thing. I mean, it also goes to, I think, one of the themes of sort of the way I grew up. You know, change and complexity are sort of part of what you grow up with and you learn to adapt. It was a pretty significant change, I think.
Huge.
If you think of my kids today, to move them to a completely new city in the 11th grade or whatever, or in high
school. No way. Not happening, man. Not happening.
Would be Armageddon. Yeah. But, you know, I think we just kind of went with the punches. It was tough.
There was no choice.
Exactly. The family moved.
But what were you feeling at that time? New friends, new place?
Yeah, I mean, I will say
and
that.
And this was probably more, was not as, you know, different people from different parts of the country probably that you had in Chennai in your school.
Well, Hyderabad was very different culturally, you know, in that time. And probably, I mean, today it's a little bit more normalized. I mean, India has become a lot more cosmopolitan when you go to different cities, you know, things are consistent. But, you know, back then it was like literally going to a completely different world. Because I think Hyderabad has this very unique, like amazing culture. It's kind of a blend of the whole sort of Deccani culture with, you know, with the Telugu culture. There's a lot of central establishments in there as well. And, you know, what happened was that we had a couple of my cousins lived around Hyderabad. So I think they were able, you know, so that sort of softened the blow a little bit in the sense that, you know, there were some people who were familiar.
Sure.
It was hard to make friends in a 2-year time frame, I'd say. So I don't really have a lot of relationships or friendships from those 2 years I spent in Hyderabad. But it was great because it again exposed me to a completely different culture. As you know, Hyderabad is incredibly, you know, entrepreneurial. And you know, back then there was like a lot of, you know, incredible focus on education and a lot of folks coming over to the US, right? So I remember a lot of my classmates, it was less so in Chennai, the sort of the inclination to go to the US or abroad to study. And it was a lot more in Hyderabad at that time. So that kind of influenced, I guess, partly my decision to come to the US in addition to, you know, some other things. But yeah, I mean, it was a completely different environment, but I think it just sort of, you know, you just jump in and you adapt and you move on, right? Move forward.
Yeah. Academically, less challenging?
Not really, actually. The AP State Board math and sciences curriculum was pretty intense. I mean, I didn't have all the ICSE, like all the other, like the multiple different foreign languages and all that stuff, right? Continued on with Hindi, English, and we had like physics, chemistry, math. I think that was pretty much it. But the math was pretty intense. Standard was pretty high. I mean, the students were incredibly competent. I would remember like, man, these guys are really, really smart. So I think in that sense, it was great. I mean, it was like, I remember those 2 years essentially being just all we did was heads down.
Study.
That's it. There was nothing else to do.
No cricket, no nothing.
You know, new place, not a lot of friends. It was like, it was a period of time I remember it was just all about just hitting the books.
That's good. So no friends, nothing, moved to a new place. So 11th and 12th, so how did that turn out? So you graduated and then what did you decide?
Yeah, so, you know, it was...
Or let's say what was decided for you?
You know, you do the usual thing. You write a bunch of entrance exams and all that stuff. And in India, they have this like esoteric system of like, you got to, you know, locals and non-locals in the way, you know, your education and universities are decided. So I ended up not being eligible to be a local in Andhra Pradesh at that time. It was a unified state. And my 11th and 12th were kind of in a different state from Tamil Nadu. So I sort of fell somewhere in the middle. I almost went to Bits Pilani in Rajasthan, but, you know, my mom was like, you know, you're going to go way over, like that's 2 days train ride to get there. And I think, you know, I really wanted to do electronics and communication. And I was offered, I think, mechanical engineering, I don't remember, some different stream. So I ended up going back to University of Madras. And, you know, I think it's one of those things, formative, right? You start to realize like, okay, you know, the world's getting real now, right? You're going to have to, you have to earn your place wherever it is. And, you know, it's not a free ride anymore.
No more. Yeah. But you moved to University of Madras. Parents stayed back in Hyderabad?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So you
Yeah, it was kind of interesting for me because I would go back and I was super familiar with the place, obviously. It was surreal to be by myself.
Well, you were in a dorm? You were in a dorm?
Yeah, I was in a dorm for, I would say, like the first year and a half, and then ended up sort of moving out and getting my own place after that.
But Chennai was familiar to you, right? You're back on familiar ground. So it was like no problems at all.
Not at all, yeah.
And that's part of the reason maybe you chose that place.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was comfortable with the city, you know, and I think Chennai has a very unique culture for people who haven't grown up there. It's a little bit, sometimes could be hard, but, you know, it's very cultural. People are amazingly, you know, just not just smart, but kind. And, you know, it's a city that's very, has a lot of heart. So I love Chennai even now. Not to mention the food. Amazing.
Amazing food. Just as an aside, do you consider Chennai home or Hyderabad home?
Yes, good question, because, you know, I pretty much grew up in Chennai, including my college. But for the last 20 odd years, my parents have been in Hyderabad. So that's
what I'm thinking.
When I go to India, I visit Chennai. I was actually there this year and I have good friends there still.
But you have great memories of Chennai too, right?
Of course. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, you know, it's familiar. There's always that familiarity, you know, like every other Indian city, it's grown and, you know, wider roads and flyovers and metro and such like.
That's true.
Character of the place has changed, but it's, yeah, you know, it's a great place.
So how was college like, the college years in Chennai?
Yeah, it was good.
You tough, know, I think academically?
It was, yeah, definitely tough. Electronics and communications is a very math intensive part of the curriculum. And we sort of, you know, you get through it in a clip because every semester you have like 6 new courses. So you're on a treadmill, like you just kind of keep pushing you forward.
Keep pushing.
Like, master,
you don't have time to think about what happened.
Yeah, I think it was great. I mean, I ended up representing, you know, our college in a few kind of presenting scientific papers and things like that. It was an excuse for me to, you know, get out of college and visit all these cool other places, which were these symposiums and, you know, ways to explore things outside of the curriculum a little bit, right? So kind of, it was fun. In, you know, in some ways it was tough too, because, you know, you miss the family and you're by yourself and, you know, you learn to kind of stand up on your own 2 feet. So it's one of those formative parts of your life where you make friendships and, you know, you're dealing with your own things by yourself. You know, the familiarity of the city obviously helped me. And again, Chennai is it's a safe city, and, you know, it's a very, sort of, the people are great, helpful. So in that sense, it was, you know, it was a good place to grow up. But yeah, it was kind of fun. You know, you make some good friends, both in college, outside of college.
And did you make some good friends in Chennai in the college years?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, absolutely. So still keep in touch with them. One of them is in Singapore, two of them are in India.
That's a separate WhatsApp group, right?
Yes.
It's amazing. Why do you think WhatsApp has got the largest user base in India? It's because of all these groups.
Yeah. But it's kind of interesting. You can almost predict the debates that are going on. It's like, it's the same thing. Oh, the same thing is getting forward over. Like, you know, you always have like the personalities. It's fun. But no, it was great. I mean, I think I learned a lot. We had some good teachers. And most of the times, like in India, what you become is essentially what you choose to become, irrespective of the college or the university or where you go to. I was surrounded by some great classmates who were great at what they did and were inspirational in their own way and push you. So, you know, I think in that sense, it was a good experience, you know, formative and, as I said, in many ways. And it helped me sort of get a sense for more responsibility and, you know, standing on my feet.
If you look back, do you think not going to BITS Pilani was a good choice?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't regret my decision to stay in Madras. I think BITS Pilani would have been more fun, I think, because, you know,
yes,
I...
definitely more fun.
I think Rajasthan. I like change and different things. And so being in a completely different environment, you know, even more kind of, I guess, you know, all India kind of classes and people would have been really exciting. I think in a lot of ways, you know, Chennai knew what it was, right? So in that sense, yeah, I think that would have been probably fun. I almost did my master's in BITS Pilani. I went back there. I had an offer to go do my ME, Master's of Engineering, at BITS Pilani before I came here. But I think, you know, from a stream perspective, I don't regret sort of sticking with my electronics and communications engineering.
No, it was incredibly hard.
Well, that's great. In terms of when you graduated, what happened then? So, you know, college comes to an end and decision time. How did you, what happens? Reality kind of strikes or bites, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, you know, I still remember it's kind of etched in my brain, the last day of college where we just defended our project and we came out and it was like May, right? In Chennai, it's blistering hot afternoon. And you're like, okay, we're done. And now what? It's kind of one of these things like you all of a sudden realize, because as I was saying earlier, when you're in college, you know, you don't think much. There's like the agenda is set for you. Like you're going to do these courses and you have these exams and, you know, you pass those and then the next semester and the next semester. And it's been that way all your life. And all of a sudden now you're like, it's wide open. Okay. Now you have things, choices to make.
It's scary a little bit though.
Yeah, for sure. Right. I think one thing I realized was that I just felt like I wanted to learn more. As part of this sort of the symposiums and things that I attended, I got interested in, you know, VLSI, which is kind of like chip design. And I was like, I wanted to explore that a little bit more. Wanted to study some more. Also, I think at that time, was not quite sure. I definitely wanted to go study abroad. My inspiration from being in Hyderabad and some of the folks that I would talk to when I would go back, they would all be preparing for their, you know, GRE and the SATs and stuff, right? So I ended up like developing an interest in that, learning more about it. But it was kind of at that time, whether you got a visa or not was a complete black box. Like you have no idea what the criteria was. So I said like, okay, I want to study. So, you know, I wrote the GATE, which is sort of the entrance exam for master's. I went to BITS Pilani, got admission there. And then, yeah, I got a couple of admissions in the U.S. You know, we were not a super well-off family, so I picked the cheapest one among them. And I said, like, all right, these guys are giving me a scholarship. I'm, you know, they're taking care of my tuition. That's my university. I'm going there. So it was. I think I was pretty sure that I didn't want to go into the workforce because I felt like I perhaps I didn't do justice to my education, you know, in the 4 years I was there, right? So
maybe it was more academic oriented and not as much applied, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, well, it was more sort of, we had all the facilities. It was just kind of like whether I spent enough time learning what I wanted to learn, more like it, right? So, you know, kind of got through your engineering degree with whatever. Like, I just felt at that time like, what have I really learned, right, that I can truly apply? And, you know, we could have applied at that time for some central, you know, like we did our project at CISR, the Central Institute for Scientific Research. And that was potentially a place that, you know, go apply and such like. But I just felt like I wanted to learn more. And more than anything else, this is sort of, I love to go see different things, different places. So going to the U.S. sounded like a big adventure.
Yeah.
And so that was my excuse. Like, yes, I want to study. Oh, by the way, I'd like to go to the U.S.
So it's a twofer, basically, that you are getting.
Now, I was always inspired by, you know, just, you know, I still remember as a kid, one of my favorite pastimes, you know, in my 11th and 12th, when we were just all about studying, my break would be to take my dad's scooter, go to the Hyderabad airport, which was kind of close by at that time. It was right in the middle of the city, and watch planes land, right? It would come in like really, really
close.
Like because the road was right at the wall.
Yeah.
So I'd actually just go there, sit on the wall and just for an hour, just watch planes land, right? And I would imagine myself like, wow, where's this plane going? Like, where are all these people going? So, and even before that, when I was a kid, my favorite comics were Tintin. I'm sure you probably read them as well. And the reason why I liked that particular comic was because every book would take you to a different part of the world, right? Did a fantastic job of kind of showing you a little bit of the cultural aspect. Like you're in South America or you're in, you know, you're in Europe or you're in, you know, America. And so I would travel the world through Tintin. And so I was like, that was one of the things that it's still for me today. Just 2 weeks ago, I was in Kazakhstan, right?
Wow. Almaty.
Yeah.
Astana.
So that was the thing that always like, I wanted to explore the world. I used to read the newspaper that come in every day and go straight to the world page to read about the world news, right? It was something that captured my imagination, and it still does today. I get this sort of excitement every time stepping off a plane into a brand new country, like a kid counting off, like, oh, Kazakhstan, Indonesia, tick off countries. So I think that combined with sort of opportunity to study, no idea what I was getting into or how hard it would be when I actually showed up there, but it sounded like a big adventure.
Well, that's great. That's great. Just looking back, if you were to isolate one or two key points that would have impacted you, you know, moving to Chennai first, was that a big thing in your life as a kid when you moved? I mean, you were too young to know that.
Yeah. I think the big thing for me really was the fact that, you know, we spoke one language at home. We spoke one language in school. I had a class in a different language and my friends would speak a different language, right? So it was like that exposure to like that complexity. I think it shapes, I think for a lot of us Indian, it shapes.
Absolutely.
I think we're so comfortable with different people, different languages, different cultures, different foods. That's in our DNA, right? And,
yeah.
And so, you know, to the meta question of why, you know, Indians tend to be successful, I think it's that ability to deal with comfort with complexity.
Adapt.
That you adapt. And it's not alien for us. You could drop us into any environment and, you know, you figure it out because we grew up that way. In some ways, I wonder if the next generation, like, you know, my kids and such, like, missing a part of that experience. But, you know, I think we live in the Bay Area and we have a very multi-ethnic neighborhood and society here. So in that sense, they do get exposure to different things at a global level. But I think that was something that was very formative for me. You know, I was a voracious reader of books. I traveled through books, right? That was my passion, was to travel, and I traveled through books. Right. So I would read about all these different places and imagine like what that place would be. Right. So there was a library called Pick and Choose, which was right next to our school. It was kind of a place that I'd love to go because every time they get a new book and it's like about something different. Right. So that was formative. And I think, you know, part of it was also just being able to see people around me who, you know, my father came from a large family. He was the eldest son, so he had the responsibility of taking care of all of them. So we didn't really have a lot of means, right, to travel cool places and such. Like, I never got on a plane until I took my plane to the US, right? We were pretty much, you know, two-tier, you know, three-tier second class, right? That was kind of train we traveled in. But it was fantastic. Just I love train journeys. You know,
yeah.
Such an experience in India, right? So a lot
it
of that
is.
The diversity and the complexity of India, I think, shapes you. And I think it lays sort of a foundation that helps you kind of deal with, you know, whatever's coming down the pike, right, in terms of your career and such, I think, in a very efficient way, right, in a great way. And I think that defines success for a lot of us.
No, I think that's a great point. Role model perspective, dad, inspiration, mom too?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think I would say, firstly, my grandfather, he was a farmer, right?
He was.
You know, he was, we would be terrified of him. He'd be like tall, 6 foot, right? With, you know, he carried this big stick, right? And, you know, he'd work incredibly hard in the fields. He had this great sense of sort of awareness of the world for somebody who was not really very well educated. I think he was just probably till 10th standard or something like that, right? He was always like curious about the world, and he would, you know, we'd sit down with him and he'd tell us like, you know, see, this is what's going on. Like, you know, a man's on the moon, and, you know, like in the village at that time, it'd be like the Milky Way, right? It was really clear. So he had like, though he was, you know, a farmer in a village, you know, he was very aware of the world. He had a big heart, philanthropic, you know, contributed to the local temple. You know, even when he was 90, he supported a girl's orphanage, right? So I think he was somebody that we would always look up to as someone who just worked incredibly hard and, you know, had a great perspective on life. He was, you know, we were all scared of him.
Of course.
You know, but then, yeah, I mean, of course, my parents as well. But, you know, I think my grandfather was someone that really, like, influenced me. I used to go with him on the bullock cart to the fields, right, paddy fields. And, you know, the reason he would carry the stick was because there'd be snakes in the fields.
Wow.
Lots of good memories there.
Wow, great memories. So you were close to him?
Yes. Yeah, very much so. You know, obviously, once I came to the U.S., didn't get to spend a lot of time, but, you know, every time I went back, always went out and visited him and spent time with him.
Wow. He was very literate. Might not be educated, but he was very literate.
He was literate, yeah. I mean, he was, I mean, I think he was not, didn't have a college degree, right? But he could read and write. And, you know, obviously he was, you know, when I would go back from here, he would say to me like, what's going on in the U.S.? Like, what are you guys like, what's going on with the politics here? Like, what are you getting this country? And like, you know, he's like in his 80s and 90s, he was sharp as a pin, right? He would have like a great observations on like society, on politics.
You would have to defend the United States with him. That's always the case, boss. But, wow, fantastic memories, Praveen. So you came here. How was that experience? You came here for graduate studies. Where did you go?
Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge. So it was
Hyderabad to Baton Rouge. Wow.
Though it felt like Chennai to me because of the weather. But yeah, look, you know, as I said, we were not of means, right? So we, you know, I just basically said like, okay, this university is giving me a tuition waiver, essentially to take care of my tuition. So that's where I'm going. You know, I could have gone to, I guess, USC, Texas A&M. And I think there was like one other one, I think University of Illinois or something like that. I don't remember. But at this time, but that was the one I picked. But it was interesting. I said, my first time ever getting on a flight, and I think I would never do this now, but I still remember like, oh, I'm going on a flight. So I'm wearing my full suit and the window seat for this like 20-hour flight.
Like, stuck in a suit.
Like, wow. Okay. So, yeah, it was great. I mean, I landed here. We used to have the Indian Student Association. They, you know, picked us up at the airport. And it was a different world you enter from that point on. You know, I was kind of used to living by myself, you know, because I spent 4 years in Madras. So that was not really Chennai. That was not that bad. But the food was different. And, you know, I was like, okay, now you have to kind of earn your own money. And,
yep.
And you know, the whole university, the curriculum was different, a lot more intense, a lot more, you know, it's graduate studies in the first place. And secondly, it's, you know, it's a completely different education system. Yeah, you're not waiting till the end of the year, end of the semester to write your exams.
Right.
So it was great. I mean, I was always amazed at how sort of helpful, you know, the local community was in adopting us, right? So I had like a host family, a local family who sort of, you know, adopted me like to help me settle down and such like. So I still keep in touch with him. And he was like a real estate agent, was also a graduate of LSU. And, you know, he's sort of my sense, I'm always curious about different, you know, cultures and peoples and places. And so I signed up, like I was, you know, who wants a host family? I'm like, go sign me up, bro. So this like randomly match you with this person. And we ended up like having a common interest in military history. And as you know, in the southern part of the United States, there are a lot of Civil War battlefields, right?
Yep.
I knew nothing about the American Civil War at that time. Mostly Second World War was kind of what I spent time on. And you know, his father was a soldier in Second World War. And so we ended up like, you know, those 2 years I was in, you know, anytime we'd get in his car and go to all these Civil War battlefields. He was a musician. So he'd take me to all these like music festivals in the middle of Mississippi and places like that. Like I would, it was a great, great introduction to American culture. Now the flip side of that was I worked in the cafeteria for a year, minimum wage.
Of course.
Right? And the first ever time they put me in sort of the washing room, right? Where dishes were coming in. And I was a disaster.
Of course.
I could not, you know, keep up with the pace at which they were coming in. But it was like, it was a humbling experience, right? Like you're, you know, as a vegetarian, so you're like picking bones and cleaning dishes and like, so you got to do what you got to do. So you get down to reality and it teaches you a lot about sort of the dignity of work and, you know, the fact that you do what you need to do. And so anyway, I was a disaster in the cleaning room. So they put me up on what they call the line, which is where you're serving, you know, people. So I said, okay, you speak English? Yes, I speak English. Like, let me hear you speak. Okay, slow down. Okay, that's good. So put me on the line. And that was another great cultural learning experience for me. I really enjoyed it because you have to greet people. Like in India, you don't necessarily always like, hey, how are you doing? How was your day? Like that's not it, right? So they would like, you know, one of my coworkers and she was kind of, you know, a permanent employee there. This amazing African-American woman. And so she kind of treated me as a son. She would like smack me on the head and say like, now you got to smile. You got to say hello. Ask her how the day is going. Like, well, you know, and, you know, she'd pick me up if I didn't have a good exam or something like that. And she taught me a lot about American culture and, you know, and that was phenomenal. I don't think I could have got a better introduction to America. A lot of what I am and how I approach things, it was like a crash course, right? Typically, we all have sort of this normalization process of we come from culture, we grew up here, it's a brand new culture, like how do you interact? And I was lucky that I got, you know, to do this in like a year's time frame with a great teacher next to me. She was my first mentor.
Kindness of people always is there. But so you got American military history, you got music, and then you got to be an expert in serving in cafeteria. That's America at its best. So you got a little bit of retail. Hey, how are you doing? What can I say? Mashed potatoes or greens? And then you found out about Civil War, a lot about it. So that's pretty cool. I mean, really, for someone who came in from Hyderabad via Chennai, so that's a great experience. So you were ready for the world after that, man.
Yeah, no, certainly. Look, you know, I think this goes back to sort of what my father always used to tell me, right? Which is like, everybody's given opportunities. It's what you do with them that kind of makes you who you are. I saw this as a, yes, I'm here to study and I got like a big academic course load, but I was going to take advantage. I was working in a cafeteria, but it was a phenomenal learning experience for me. Maybe I didn't quite feel it that way because it was hard work standing on your feet for like, you know, for 3-4 hours and serving Louisiana food, which is very unique, by the way.
Cajun.
Cajun, yeah. Like you have like gumbo and jambalaya and breakfast and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to interact with these people and I made the most out of it in terms of learning as much as I could, right?
Maybe your first sales experience, probably.
You know, you have to, I think America as a country, it's amazing, is that, you know, it is really all about engaging, you know, other people. You know, it's culture that's in some ways also very similar to India because we're also very people oriented. So, but yeah, it was a phenomenal experience. And I just am thankful for my first mentor. Her name was Serena, you know, great, great, large-hearted person who's taught me a lot.
Well, that's fantastic. So then you graduated and what happened then? How did the journey kind of, you know, at Insight Partners, tell us what happened?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. I was a little bit of sort of a, you know, when I was going through my graduate studies, I was doing VLSI design, basically design, you know, in the 90s, that's kind of, you know, you wanted to go work at an Intel or the instruments, right? Right. That was kind of the ultimate sort of objective. What happened was that, you know, as part of my graduate student work, I got exposed to the internet. You know, it's early version of the internet. Internet, essentially, in the early days, was a network to connect all the universities and research labs to supercomputer centers, right? There were like 4 or 5 of them, you know, across the U.S. So one of my graduate student jobs was to basically maintain the network that connect the university out to the supercomputer networks, as well as all the departmental inside the department networks. And so that got me exposed to the internet, right? The very, very early.
Early.
And so I quickly sort of got a lot of interest in that and lost interest in chip design. And I got sort of midway through my master's pivoting into more of a networking, study of networking. There was no real courses or textbooks or anything at that time. So luckily, I found a professor who was also interested in this and was able to do my thesis in this. And as part of that, I got exposed to Cisco.
Routers.
Cisco Systems, which was one of the early companies in the space, right? They were the pioneering company in space. You know, we used to have one of their routers in our university and it used to crash all the time. So I'd be on the phone with them, talking to them, saying like, hey, you know, and they'd send me code. And, you know, it was very experimental. So I would play with it and send them feedback. So I got to build a relationship with them. So when I graduated, you know, they basically offered me a job, right? And I applied for, I mean, they offered me a job. And so I still remember I hadn't slept for 3 days for my thesis defense. And then I get a call from somebody at Cisco basically saying like, hi, this is Joe Pinto from Cisco. Do you have a few minutes? We would like to interview you. Like, oh, wow. I initially thought it was one of my friends pulling off a joke because I was like completely exhausted. And I just sent my resume in front of all of them. But, you know, it turned out they flew me out to California. It was like amazing for a poor graduate student to come out to California. And yeah, interviewed me, went through my kind of like 8 hours of back-to-back interviews. And I got a job offer and I ended up here joining Cisco. I was just, as again, one of those things where I was incredibly lucky. A whole bunch of things came together, you know, like my interest in networking, the opportunity to meet the Cisco folks. So that's the theme in life, right? You, every person, no matter what your capability or where you're from, you're given opportunities. And if you have the kind of the foresight and the diligence to take advantage of that, it just keeps opening more doors. So this was a door that opened and I've been in California ever since.
Yeah, not a bad place to be. Looking at the bridge behind you, you obviously work with startup, invest, venture, mentor, a lot of them. You know, one of the things that I wanted to find out is across, and you built some companies, et cetera, there must have been challenges over, you know, whether it's Cisco or elsewhere. I mean, there's just nothing, just smooth sailing. And people say, hey, he built a company in 2 years and sold it for $2 billion. Generally, that's whitewashing some of these stories. So when days were tough, what was it that you were looking to help you get out of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're the sum of your experiences, right? And I think in a lot of ways, you know, as I said, I always looked at every situation I was in, sometimes challenging that you did not want to be in, or, you know, you felt like it was a bad situation as an opportunity to learn. And so over the years, I had accumulated enough what I call scars on the back experiences.
All of us, huh?
Yeah. And I think when you, you know, when you're in sort of a situation where you're the CEO of a company, I think you basically get to deal with the toughest of problems in the company, right? And in fact, you know, I think I was hearing Elon Musk talk about this as well, but, you know, essentially the CEO, your job is to deal with all the problems. You never get to deal with the good stuff, right? Because if it's going well, then, you know, hey, it's going well, right?
Yeah.
And so I think in order for you, when I became a CEO for the first couple of months, I had like no idea what I was doing, because it's like, you know, it's like, all right, I have good people running engineering, sales, marketing, HR. What's my job? Well, kind of took me a couple of minutes to kind of figure that out. And I think you realize, as I mentioned earlier, your job is to basically be, you know, be that person who solves problems, right? To enable the team to go to do what they need to do. So you have to be prepared for that. You know, a CEO's role is something that you, one of my mentors used to tell me, like, it's the hardest job you'll ever do. So maybe you better be careful what you're asking for, because you just might get it, right? And he was right, because I think when you're in that job, you know, you have to kind of fall back on your experiences, on your values, right? And you focus on, you know, prioritization, like hard prioritization, because there'll be like 15 fires burning. What is the one that absolutely needs your attention, like here and now? And then I think, you know, you got to leverage. You're not going to solve this by yourself. You're not a Superman. No leader is. You are who you are because of the team around you. So hopefully you've done a good job of surrounding yourself and getting the right people around you. And if you do, then your job is kind of like, you know, think through that and make sure that you and your team get into it and resolve it. So there are a lot of, you know, I think you can never anticipate all the curveballs that come in. You know, it could be like a sales deal, a competitive one. You know, I still remember we were trying to close our quarter. You know, every quarter I used to be in the office, and we, you know, our year ended December 31st, right? So for 4 years when I was at VCE, I was in the office till 2 a.m, right? Every New Year's Day, closing the year. And so one such times, you know, we had the situation where we had this big deal and we couldn't kind of recognize the revenue from the deal unless the customer took possession of, you know, of the equipment we were selling. And this equipment was stuck in a truck in a snowstorm in Tennessee.
Oh, my gosh.
So we were literally on the phone with the truck driver, routing him to the closest sort of warehouse where the customer could take possession.
Possession.
Recognize the revenue. Like, it's kind of like, you know, when...
Nobody teaches you this in any business school or anything like that.
Now, that time was super tense because we were going to like miss a $5 million deal. But now you kind of look back at it and it was like you problem solved it. Like, you know, okay, hey, somebody came with the idea. Let's just call the truck driver, right? And God, with the closed warehouses, and nobody, none of us thought. And he's like sitting at a truck stop saying, yeah, the road to Atlanta is closed. So I think, you know, those kind of things, they come in, your teams, you collectively, you have to build a good rapport with them. And hopefully, you know, you've built a team that you, that trusts you, most importantly, and that you won their respect, that they would, you know, follow you, right, through these situations. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that we can talk about from just a, you know, a team, what it takes to be a leader, right? And I've learned so much from so many amazing people. But yeah, I think the biggest thing I will always go back to is what I'm most proud of is not necessarily that, you know, we exited a couple of companies or you know, built some amazing products. It's the fact that to this day, the teams that I work with still come back to me for mentorship or just to catch up. You know, folks that I worked with 20 years ago, right? Or who used to report to me, you know, still when I come across them, they're like, hey, you know, I had a great, you're a great leader. You know, I learned a lot from you. And that's really the thing that matters the most, right? You made an impact beyond just the numbers.
Oh, that's a great point. So you said basically look to your values, build great teams, and deal with the hard problems and communicate with your teams. Those are great advices. You know, Praveen, just briefly, if you can answer this, because at the top of the show, I said you mentor or invest in U.S. startups as well as Indian startups. Can you just give us a very brief difference between the two entrepreneurial ecosystems, if possible, just briefly?
Yeah, for sure. I will say that I think post-COVID, a lot of things have normalized in the sense that they, you know, used to be a time when you're in Silicon Valley and you would go to India or you go to any other startup ecosystem, and you felt like, you know, you were like a year or two ahead of that ecosystem in terms of your understanding of the technology or the state of sort of where the startup ecosystem was. That's no longer the case, I think, post-COVID, because essentially when everything went online, it normalized the access to information, the ability for people, whether they're in India or Israel or you know, Kazakhstan, right, to be able to connect with other people, customers, including customers, right? So that's one observation. Second observation I'd make is that I think India as an ecosystem, you know, why is Silicon Valley Silicon Valley? There are certain set of things that are foundational to why the valley became, why it's called even Silicon Valley, right? Fundamentally, it was like this, the creation of great companies here, which then ended up spinning off entrepreneurs who had confidence, right? Because they could stand on their own feet. The presence of capital, venture capital to fund some of those founders, and became this sort of virtuous cycle. And then universities producing great talent that would come out and found companies like Cisco and Google and such, like out of Stanford, right? Venture capitalists. Now out of Cisco came executives that founded the next set of companies, right? So that virtuous cycle is kind of how Valley became the Valley. I think in India, it started with sort of the business process, the business, you know, the sort of
outsourcing.
The outsourcing revolution, right? Infosys, Wipro, all of these companies that were founded. And I think that created a unique India ecosystem in India where Indian engineers went out to the world and understood what the world's problems were, right? I used to still be surprised. I was once in Sweden meeting with Volvo, and we were discussing the whole project. And they were like, hey, it's great, you know, but we need to make sure that our experts are, we're going to actually implement this thing, are comfortable with it. And in walked two of my fellow Chennaiites from, yes.
Of course.
Right, in Sweden, like they're the ones who are implementing this thing. So I think the business process automation stuff that happened, outsourcing, it gave India a perspective of what the world's problems were. It gave Indian engineers the ability to understand how to work with different customers and sell solutions. And I think that laid the foundation for the ecosystem around startups. Now, I still think there's, because we don't have large scale companies, right? Most Indian companies, unfortunately, kind of shift the headquarters to Singapore or to the US when they're ready to go public. And so you sometimes miss out on that, this sort of virtuous cycle that we saw in the US. But, you know, now you have, it used to be that we used to send all of our work that US engineers didn't want to do to India, but now you have research centers that Google has built or Amazon's built or Microsoft's built in India building products, right, for the world. And so those engineers with a maturing sort of understanding of the customer, and now with venture capital, I mean, we are investors, obviously, but we are later stage investors. There's a wealth of capital out there, including, you know, local venture firms that have been doing a great job of finding great talent and encouraging them to start companies. So I think Indian startup ecosystem now is, I would say, is really mature. One of my companies, Postman, was incubated in Bangalore. Amazing set of founders from Bits. and it's going to be one of those iconic companies, right? You know, Freshworks went IPO, a SaaS company out of Chennai. I think the Indian ecosystem, obviously smaller in scale in terms of, you know, amount of funding.
It's getting there. It's getting there, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's definitely getting there. And the fact that India itself is a massive market with its own unique requirements, and you have like amazing world-class companies that have been built out there, like Paytm and, you know, Swiggy and Zomato and all these companies, and they have like, you know, scale problems. So now they themselves are customers. So you have this ecosystem now where Indian engineers actually talk to customers who are in India because the market's big enough, right?
That's true.
So that's a key advantage. I think, you know, ecosystem will make massive strides over the next few years, is no doubt in my mind.
Well, that's very helpful to know. Praveen, you know, obviously, you've still got so much bandwidth and runway ahead of you. Where do you see the journey going from here?
Yeah, you know, I think I think of this as sort of, you know, the first phase of my career, you know, my goal was like to be able to be a great sort of operator and a great leader. And I learned from the best. And I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to lead two companies as a CEO, right? The second phase of my career is as an investor. I get to, you know, sit on boards, mentor founders, you know, just be blown away by the ideas and the enthusiasm of a global ecosystem of founders, everyone from India to Israel, companies in India, in Israel, in the US, in Europe that I invest in. And, you know, it teaches you, you can apply a lot of what my operating experiences are, but also be able to kind of see and help these companies grow. You know, I hope, you know, the third phase of my career would be one to teach. Love to be able to, you know, to teach and, you know, I had the opportunity to speak to a couple of, you know, student bodies, right, on topics around AI and startups and such like. And I really enjoyed that. And I love the energy. So, yeah, I mean, I think my current focus and journey is to work with my amazing founders and companies and continue to find these companies. But, you know, in the long, long term, maybe at some point I'll get to teach. So,
well, that's great. Great path to go down. If you were to talk to, just pretend I'm, you know, Praveen, who's graduating out of the master's in, let's say I'm graduating out of Chennai, what would be the one or two things that you would say what you know today?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I'd say three things. The first one, which is kind of, you know, as I mentioned before, right, is every single individual, no matter what your capability is or where you're from, you will be presented with opportunities. I think success in life, in your career, really depends on how, what you make of those opportunities, right? There's no such thing as luck, right? Luck is about recognizing the opportunity. You already have luck because you'd be presented with the opportunity. You have to just take advantage of it. I think the second thing is be open, right? Be open-minded. And this is extremely important because there's a lot of situations where you're very strongly held opinions on things. It could be personal, it could be political, it could be, you know, on a technology point or at work, or whatever. You know, I learned this from my professor at Harvard Business School, Professor Linda Hill. Now, I used to get very frustrated with politics. It's like, oh, people are playing politics. They're keeping me down, not letting me build my stuff. And what she said is, look, you know, politics is nothing but the expression of human, you know, interest. Everybody is expressing their interest. So your job is not to complain, but your job is to really put yourself in their shoe, understand where they're coming from, right? And that's really the way for you to be able to resolve some of these things, because at the end of the day, everybody's going to be representing their interests. So I think that's the second part, is keep an open mind, right? Listen, right? And be able to sort of engage with people and as a way to move forward. I think the third thing would be humility. Be humble. No matter what you've achieved in life, you've not achieved it because of your own brilliance. It's because of the people who came along that journey with you. As a CEO, I always used to go into a situation with my team, even with the attitude that I have to earn their respect, right? Just because I have this title doesn't mean that they should follow me. I have to earn the right for them to follow me. And so I think being humble and always looking to learn and looking to appreciate from, you know, what you can learn from, whether it's people above you, people, your peers, or people who report to you, right? I think, you know, that would be the third one.
Those are great points. Be humble, be open, and, you know, be flexible to ideas. I think they are fantastic suggestions. I wish I talked to you 20 years ago, but that's a whole different story. At the conclusion, we do this with all our guests. Praveen, one or two sentences, what is your definition of Indianness?
Yeah, I mean, I think Indianness for me really is about being open, being sort of, you know, enjoying the richness of our culture and being able to sort of continue to learn. I mean, these are things that you are inherently imbibe as an Indian, right? The richness of our culture, the diversity of our culture and our country, right? As well as, you know, the inherent sort of goodwill and kindness that we have as a people is something that I try to bring into sort of all of my interactions. And a lot of the themes that we talked about essentially are about that, right? Open mind, open heart.
Great point. Open mind and open heart. That's Indianness. Finally, a last question for you. One person alive, whether it's in India or outside India, but of Indian origin, that inspires you, but can't be your family.
This is a tough one because I think I can, you know, pick people on the professional side. You could be the professor who kind of gave me an opportunity. It was a tricky thing in grad school to switch things. He took a chance on me and, you know, somebody who's always taught me to go out and explore and learn. And even when we were in the middle of a lot of like, what do we build here? His openness was amazing. I mean, his motivation was amazing. I mean, there's sort of a spiritual leader who I look up to. You know, I go on this pilgrimage every year, and just some of the principles that person has taught me, that could be an example. You know, most of my career has been here, and, you know, so I don't have that much interaction with a lot of business leaders in India. But
no, forget business leaders in India. Here, or you have anybody that inspires you? Just one.
Satya Nadella would be amazing, right? I mean, what he's been able to do, stepping into, like, you know, there's a great book called, you know, Making Elephants Dance. It's about, like, how do you turn around and kind of manage like a massively complex organization. What he's done both in terms of elevating Microsoft into the cloud as well as now into AI, phenomenal. He's also a very straightforward, straight spoken. He's from Hyderabad, by the way.
Of course. Also humble.
Yeah, exactly.
All those qualities you talk about. So great. That's a great choice. Wonderful, Praveen. We have come to the end of our podcast. Thank you so much for being so open, spending so much time with us, and inspiring so many others with your journey. So really appreciate you coming.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Indianness Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future inspirational stories.